I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, joined by your fake baseball economist and my co-host, Alexander Chase. Joining us for this episode is the one and only Mr. Alex Fast, as we discuss his path from child actor to giant of all things MLB, the top five pitchers with the slowest pitches so far this year, excluding position players, how to analyze pitchers to catch a breakout, his video overlay process, and so much more. But before we get to all of this very, very good stuff, Alex Fast, how you doing?
Yeah, living the dream. I got this broken foot, which really stinks. I gotta go for an MRI next Tuesday. So other than having to hobble around the borough of Brooklyn with one foot in 90 degree weather and intense humidity.
I was going to say a tad humid today. Yeah.
Oy vey, yeah, it's just a little too humid, but it's a great weight loss program. Walking around New York City in a boot. No, other than that, there's great baseball on, so I'm pretty happy. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. I have to ask the obvious question though. Was this a ploy to get out of having to play at the pitcherless meetup wiffle ball game?
You know what? I have so little to look forward to in life, and that was one of those things. It was not. I wish I had a cool story. And it's not. I broke it playing catch with my niece. There's nothing
oh,
heroic.
That's a sweet story, though. That's okay.
That's not. And I had just bought her a little Mike Trout ball from the MLB team store, and it was heading down a storm drain. And she's like seven, and she's got a cannon for a seven-year-old. And I mean, she threw that ball too hard, and it's a real ball. And I was like, I know that I have two options: run for this ball, or just deal with a lot of tears. So I ran for it, and now I live to regret it every day.
Did you save the ball?
I saved the ball.
Okay. I don't know. I think it's not my ankle, so it's easy to say, but I think it's worth it.
It is worth it. If this surgery has to happen, not worth it.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But I did save the ball, and then I took them to the pool the next day, and then I drove them to New York. And
this ankle, something's a little wonky with this thing. I should probably go get that checked out, huh?
It's not even the ankle. It's the ball. It's the left ball of my foot. There's two muscles in it called the sesamoid, and it's broken in half. And it just throws everything else out of whack. It sucks.
Yeah, that sounds. I don't know anything about muscles, but that sounds horrible.
It's not fun.
So fast. You're telling me that there's a thing called the sesamoid that isn't just something that Yosemite Sam from Bugs Bunny accidentally says.
I'll see. Bugs Bunny. Yeah. Sesamoid sounds like a weird, if a hemorrhoid cream had a personified kind of thing. It's it's
mascot.
The sesamoid. Yeah, exactly.
Preparation H.
Sesame flavored hesamoid.
Yeah, I guess.
A planet from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is, it's fully broken. And that really stinks. But it's just great. It really is that dumb song of the leg bone connected to the what bone, whatever. And yeah, the leg bone connected to the arm bone. I don't know what weird version you grew up with.
I'm not going to medical school, so I just want to say,
God,
this is not my job to figure that out.
So it really does feel like, you walk funny and then your hip hurts and then your other leg hurts.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, that's that is not what anyone is coming here to listen to.
It's the same thing that happens to the major league ball players, though, right? They tweak something and then they tweak something else because they're compensating for it. So it's all relevant. It all comes back.
It is. And have sympathy for him because I don't have to play baseball the next day and do it 162 times a year.
Right.
How did Cal Ripken do it?
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Insane.
So, Chase, what about you? How are things? How are things in D.C.?
We were fully 4 minutes into this, so it's good to say hello. beautiful, honestly. I'm so impressed. I also just want to say, I'm doing great in part because Fast did our job for us by talking about the weather for us, which
was awesome.
Always
invariably
do.
Yeah.
Beautiful. unlike the weather here today, just gross.
Chef's kiss. All right. Well, let's jump in here. We have you on. I have to ask you about your path to
where you're at now with fantasy baseball, baseball, obviously all the MLB stuff, the ESPN stuff. My God, you're a rock star. But that's not where it started. That was not the original career path in your younger days. So talk to us just a little bit, as much as you're comfortable about how you transitioned from teen idol to baseball, fantasy baseball industry stud.
Teen idol. I love the way this is phrased, too. Like, it makes me think, like, you know, it's August 6th, 1987. Robin and Jared Fast are celebrating their anniversary. I was in theater for a really, really long time. I have a brother who's much older than me. I've never told this part of the story. I have a brother who's 10 and a half years older than me. When okay. I was in third grade, he was 18, and he was going to the city to look at colleges that he wanted to go to, and I went with them because I was 8 years old, and they can't leave me home alone, obviously. And we went up to New York. My family's from Queens, originally, and I said, I had experience coming up to New York, and I said, this is where I want to go to school. I want to go to school at NYU. Which is a dangerous thing for an 8-year-old to tell their parents, because then they're, you know, when you're like fourth grade and you have a test to study for, they're like, if you don't get an A on this,
dream goodbye, kid.
Yeah, exactly. So I go to NYU. I do the acting thing for a while. I go study in London and live there for a while and doing acting all over the place. Start my own theater company. Or co-start it with a bunch of friends, do theater in Philly, do theater in Brooklyn, do commercials, do off-Broadway. And then I had a meeting with a large agent, and this is what you dream of. Mm-hmm. I remember looking in their office on the 20th floor overlooking Manhattan, and the first thing they asked me about isn't my resume, but, you know, what's your YouTube presence like? What's your Twitter profile like? And ironically, I was like, it's funny because I had no followers, and then that changed when baseball happened. But at the time, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not doing this industry if that's what this is. I just don't have the patience for this, and I don't have the mind for it. I'm too anxious. Mm-hmm. I have way too much anxiety to try and get a job, and then 6 weeks later, try and get another job. So I packed it up. I went to grad school for tech, for interactive telecommunications, focusing on AR. And I had a lot of difficulty learning programming, but I focused on learning programming through baseball and baseball statistics. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine had brought me into his fantasy league a few years before. I'd always been a baseball fan, but I'd never been religiously, you know, like when I was growing up, we had Ripken and then 13 years of straight losing seasons in Baltimore while the Ravens were winning Super Bowls in the 2000s. Yeah, right. And like, so I was a little bit more football. I liked baseball. But I was kind of like, when you're putting the corpse of Sammy Sosa and Vladimir Guerrero and Albert Bell on the field in Baltimore, like, there's not much to get excited about. Like, how much can you fall in love with Sidney Ponson? I go to grad school, go to this hackathon, end up winning this hackathon, getting a job at MLB, and started learning how to do pitch overlay tutorials, because I want to take some concepts and try and make them a little bit more relatable, because mm-hmm. they're really high level, as I'm sure you can all relate to. And that's kind of my passion, is like taking high level Statcast statistics or the game of baseball in and of itself and making it relatable. And then just got like lucky, just got really lucky. Like, we started doing the KBO thing, went on ESPN, went to MLB Network, like, just got lucky. People were like, oh, I saw you, can you come do this? I saw you on this, can you come do this? So after shying away from the acting industry for so long, here I am. They pull me back
full
in.
Full circle. But on your terms, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me ask you one more question, and then we'll kind of talk about a couple other things. And Chase, I'm sorry. I promise that you're part of this podcast, too.
I'm okay with this.
I am very curious. So, like, a lot of people in fantasy industry are, like, fantasy people, and they're Statcast people, or they're, you know, they're looking at lineups, they're looking at prospects, they're taking it from that angle, and certainly, like, you know, you're putting in that kind of stuff with pitchers and all that. But you've got this other thing where you've got this broadcast side, right, and the media side of baseball. How does that influence or shape the way that you approach the fantasy stuff and the analysis that you do? Is it different from what you would see other people doing because of that? Is it, I don't know. I'm very curious about how those two kind of different but very connected things work off of each other.
Man, that's such a good question. You know, I guess off the top of my head, I guess the way that I kind of think about it is, I'm living in the kind of middle of a Venn diagram, right? And the Venn diagram, the center part of it is what we just kind of talked about, where it's making baseball relatable. You know what I mean? Okay, I put it this way. You know how, like, sometimes you see a movie or you play a video game or you listen to a band and you're like, God, this band is so good. And, like, I don't think people really, excuse me, I don't think people realize how good this band is. You know, let me tell you about this band. And their bass player does this, and their musician doing this, and the guitarist, the way that he does this is actually different because, while it's influenced by this person, it's actually doing this. That, to me, is the center of the Venn diagram for baseball, right? Like, this is what this pitcher's doing, and it's really cool, really that, and it's really this. And that brings in the fantasy crowd because, naturally, right, I'm talking about the performances of players and how they operate and how they think. And then the broadcast side comes into it, too, because I think I try my best to try and make those concepts relatable and try to imbue them with a sense of passion that, even if you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe you're interested because I'm saying it at a fast rate and in a very and gesticulating a lot.
I don't know what you said, but I'm excited too.
That is literally, you might as well have quoted my mother. Like, she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it seems like you're having fun saying it. That is such a good question. But yeah, so I it's funny because I don't think of myself that way, like in terms of like, I don't go on Twitter and I'm not like, I don't search out broadcast opportunities I don't like be like, how am I going to write about fantasy right now? It's just, I'm very, very fortunate with this platform to just be able to pursue things that I think are interesting. And then whoever wants to talk about it with me, whoever wants to read whatever it is I write, like, cool. That's great. That's awesome.
That's a really great headspace. And I'm going to right now, for full disclosure, give all credit to that question to Chase, because he's the one who came up with that. So and now I'm going to give you space to follow up with that, because you earned it.
Did I really? You know, it's funny. I feel like the version of kind of like living in Baltimore while the team is what kind of has been a lot of the time is a weird parallel to, like, I grew up in the Dallas area and could not have cared any less about the Texas Rangers because, well, again, have you heard of the Texas Rangers before? And the lineups they were rolling out. We're especially talking about like the post A-Rod trade Rangers, where like there was just nothing going on other than heat, and not like from the pitchers, just from the sun. And it was really interesting. You know, I feel like I got really into caring about baseball the second I moved out to Baltimore and started getting tickets for Orioles games. They weren't winning, mind you. I moved there a little bit after Machado moved out, you know, it's only by sheer force of will from people who are really excited about things in general that I feel like I'm sitting here today and caring about these things. So there's not a huge part of me necessarily that like is out there who wants to really just grind out a bunch of content because I get some great joy from that, which some cool people really do.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. But I feel like the stuff that's really fun is just like, hey, this thing is interesting. And I think that some of the best and most interesting baseball work comes from people who, like, the primary thing that kind of drives them is just finding out why it is these really wacky things are constantly happening. I really appreciate kind of like where that seems like it pushes you, and a lot of other people like that, because I think that's like where a lot of the most fun conversations we have come from. It's just like, I don't need to write this today, because instead let's go figure out what the heck is going on with full gyro fastballs that are coming out from that stuff is like, you're not going to get an answer very often. You're probably just gonna end up just as confused as you were when you went, because a lot of the times, even when you're really well equipped statistically or whatever else to answer those questions, the answer is still, yep, it's only working because it's wacky. Which is, I think, to kind of like really super double back if we can, one of the cool things about the overlays as a thing for you to get into is just kind of reveals at the end of the day, sometimes when you're wacky, that's fine, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's so many good points that are raised there. And I think that, you know, there's a few things. Like, one, you're learning about this stuff is only going to raise more questions. And I remember there being at one point being like, how many more things can we learn about this? And it's like, it's just infinite. You know what I mean? It's just infinite. Mm-hmm. And we're also, I think, really privileged in the fact that, like, you know, I'm very fortunate in that Pitcherless is not, you know, it's a fun source of income. It's a small little thing at the end of the month that I can get something really small and enjoy. But like, there isn't that pressure of grinding out the content, like you said. Right. And as a result, I can be a little bit more patient, and, you know, I'm afforded the opportunity to be like you said, what's going on with these gyro fastballs? What, you know, what's going on? I remember for a while it was like, what is it called, strike? Do they matter? Do they not? You know, like it's fun to go down those rabbit holes, and then to also gain an acceptance of, you know, I had a really important moment where I was doing some research for MLB.com or something, some research on baseball about post recognition point break, right? Like what pitchers were getting the most movement after the quote unquote supposed recognition point from a batter. It was recognition point and then commit point, right? I think commit point was even more important. And I was convinced. Because it just seems so intuitive that any pitcher that was getting more break after a batter had committed would theoretically have a better pitch, right? Mm-hmm. It just made sense to me. Yeah. That seems intuitive, right? I mean, there's literally a point after the commit point, the batter can't see anymore. You know what I mean?
I can't do anything about it, even if they could.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's when I realized so I started having that conversation. They can on the front end by compensating, right? Which could theoretically explain why hitters get better third time through the order, right? They say, oh, well, the curveball, I know it's coming here. It's actually going to drop down here. So this is how I'm going to compensate, right? But after all this research and, you know, being fortunate enough to be able to have conversations with Tom Tango about this, went nowhere. It was wrong. It was bad. You know what I mean? There was not, I could not pull up enough data to pull up something conclusive, and that sucked. But it was also okay. You know, I had to have that realization of, like, it's okay to be like, hey, here's everything I learned. There's nothing here, but all right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's really fun about that approach is, like, there's not a single number in what you just said, basically. You know, it's really funny to me. A lot of, like, the straw man discussions about people who do analytics-y things. And I like to try to avoid that word because, you know, the worst conversations we have are when we just throw a noun around and then no one actually talks about what they do.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, go on any topic you want. That's a central problem of how we talk about things. But, you know, you're telling me, like, okay, here's this problem. And I had this theory and I went and tested it and, you know, science or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, like, there's not really a big way to discredit that. But it also is really fun to see that people who aren't just going and being the straw man, hey, I punched a bunch of numbers into a linear regression and this is what it said. You know, most people who do really fun stuff with numbers are kind of coming from what looks like an eye test guess, which is what, you know, you're describing. And it's so fun to think, you know, like, that's where the fun stuff is. Let's go watch some baseball and find some weird stuff, and then go chase around tails around for like 72 hours straight without getting any sleep.
That's where most of the entertainment of the game is coming from, though, right? There is this niche group of people who love the numbers, and more power to them. I think that's great. And it certainly is influencing the way that baseball is being played and the on-field product and all of that. But for most people, they're starting with their eye test. So they're coming to the content with questions they're trying to answer. And I mean, obviously what we're trying to do here to a certain degree is to kind of anticipate what some of those questions might be and empower the people listening to this pod to be able to go and do some of that for themselves and apply a case study. We're talking about this guy, but you can go do the very same thing with any other, you know, pitcher or left-handed pitcher or right-handed batter. I think that's really important. There's one more thing before we get into, I mean, we're still in our bell ringer, and that's fine because this conversation I think is a really important and interesting one. And for me at least, and that's all that matters, is to just highlight a few things. There's been a lot of stuff going on lately with people being very, I think, open and honest about the grind that people can fall into in the industry. And needing to take a step back and the stress and the anxiety that comes from that. And I think that that's something that you talk about a lot. And I appreciate that. So this is less of a like, hey, you need to really pull back the curtain here and open up your soul, and more of just an opportunity to say thank you, because I think that that's a really important thing for people in this industry on all sides of it to hear and see. Like, if you're feeling bad because your team stinks and it's supposed to be good and opening that app gives you anxiety, like, it's okay. Don't open it tonight. You know, like, it's very easy to get wrapped up in these things, but there's bigger, broader, big picture stuff that's more important. And the handful of people that's growing who are being open and willing and able to talk about this is so very important. And I just want to, for all of the thousands of awesome things that you do for this industry, that's certainly, in my opinion, one of the top, because it's just so important for people to hear and to read and see. And being vulnerable is hard, and especially for somebody who is experiencing those feelings. So I think that's huge. You know, if you want to just talk for a half a second about it, I certainly don't mean to you know, put you on the couch and do a therapy session, but I really do think it's super important that people who are at the kind of the top, you know, the people who are out there pushing the content, to also say, hey, but pause. Hey, listen, I love this too, but there's other things out there that can really get in the way. And if you're feeling bad about something, that's more important.
Without a doubt. And I mean, I've been in therapy long enough in my life that I have no problem laying down on anyone's couch and talking. There's a few things. You know, I always think it's so funny when I see, funny is a poor choice of words, so I apologize for that. I pause when I see people like, just 5 more until I get 5,000, just, you know, 10 more until I get 10,000. Yeah. That's great. You should be doing that. You should, if that's what you want to do, push for that. And I imagine at some point I did the same thing. That it doesn't get easier when you start to get more of those followers. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize at some point that you have to take a step back from any social media platform, because the thing about Twitter is you can only see the people who are tweeting, not the people who aren't. If Sarah Langs, who is one of the best in the business, and if you're not following me on Twitter, you should be at S-Langs on Sports. Mm-hmm. If she took a week-long break, my feed wouldn't see it. There's no indicator in the top right-hand corner that says Sarah Langs is not tweeting this week, so hey, you can stop tweeting too. All you're going to see perpetually is everyone on your Twitter feed putting out more content.
Right.
So the only person who's going to be able to give yourself permission to take a step back and take a day for you is you.
Exactly right.
And you have to be able to do that. And the last thing I'll say about it is I am not afraid to say that there are days, especially in the middle of the season, one day, 2 days, or 3 days, where I don't watch baseball.
Yeah.
Just don't watch any baseball. And that's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. Take a break. Don't look at a box score. Do a reset. Like, I understand that it can be a great community. Sometimes it can be a poor community. But the point is everyone wants to be pushing out this content, and the guilt that you feel about someone's going to be doing it better, someone's going to be doing this, should I be doing this, should I be doing that, it's all internal. Mm-hmm. So take a break. It's all good. Baseball's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's very well said. I don't think there's anything else that I can add on to that, but say again, thank you for that. All right, we're going to move into something a little bit more fun. And actually, Alexander, I'm going to turn this over to you, because this was another one of your brain children. Is that how you say that? Brain child? It's got to be brain children, right? I don't know. You're the essay teacher.
I don't want to know the answer to that question.
This was your idea. And so
that sounds better.
I think this is a cool segment. So for our number of the week, we're going to use the number 5, and we're going to look at the top 5 slowest pitches in MLB so far who are not position players, right?
Oh,
and
well, actually, I should amend this a little bit.
Okay.
It's not the top 5 slowest pitches, because too many of those would go to the same person. So,
top 5 pitchers. I decided then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The pitchers who've thrown the slowest pitches, and they all happen to be starting pitchers. So I'll give you that little piece of wisdom, if you will.
Yeah, you to try and guess those top 5. How many guesses? How many guesses are we?
Let's give him 5 and see how many he gets. I think that, and we'll see how we feel after 5 guesses.
Are you down? Man. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm totally down. I was like so excited, because I was like, okay, Brock Holt, Williams Astudillo, like those guys were like in there. But now we're talking about the slowest from a starting pitcher, like
from somebody whose job it is to pitch the ball. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, we figured that you, Alex Fast, would know something about, you know, not going fast. So that was the hope, at least.
Okay, so you have to figure that, like, okay, so the first one's got to be obvious. Zach Greinke has to be one of the first ones, right?
Check.
The first one.
He has the slowest pitch by a non-position player this year at 51.5 miles per hour.
51.5. Okay.
That is 10 miles an hour slower than the next slowest from, like, a starter.
Wow. Okay.
Well, you're one for one.
This is where this
that's
gets
good.
Tough.
Well, that's the easy one. That's the easy one. Okay. So I'm trying to think of, like, a dude who would throw, like, an... Oh, is Darvish one of them? Did he ever just have an Ephus that he threw?
Darvish did not make this list, and I'm actually surprised by it. Yeah. I feel like he would have just done something like that, but Darvish is not here.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go older and stick with curveball, like an older curveball, because I have a feeling they would be like an Ephus kind of guy.
Okay.
Maybe like an Adam Wainwright?
You know, he just missed... Actually,
I'm blowing it.
Okay. Honestly, that's a really good guess.
He's right around the bullseye. I mean, they're pretty good shots.
If we had been all people who've thrown a pitch under 65 miles an hour, he would have made the list. But I wanted to make this easier, and by doing so, I apparently have not, which is way fun.
No. This is fun. Oh, okay. I know. This is fun. Okay, Alex, you're having a great time. Okay. All right. So I'm going to stick with the veterans. It's not. Okay. This isn't a guess. I'm saying it's not. And I'm looking at your face. It's not Edwin Jackson. Good. Okay. Good. Very good. Okay. Kyle Hendricks.
Bingo. Oh, yep, there we go. Third on the list. Okay. 62.4 miles per hour.
So I'm at 50%. 62.4.
Yep.
Now, I think it's a little bull that we're not counting Williams Astudillo because he is all things. Yeah, he is not a starting pitcher. I don't know. Okay, let me think. All right, can you give me a division of any of the other ones, because I'm at a loss here.
Ooh, I'm gonna check something, but yeah, I mean, one of them National League East, second place
National League East. Okay, so it wouldn't be anyone on the Mets. I don't think it would be anyone on the Marlins. I'll just guess Charlie Morton. But I think he throws pretty fast still. No, not it.
No dice.
All right, who was it?
That one's Patrick Corbin, actually.
Patrick Corbin?
Yeah.
What was the pitch?
I don't
anything
know.
Anything to get it over the plate?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That really surprises me.
Me too. You know, I went to both of his last starts of the year in 2019, when tickets were like basically free before the Nats won the World Series. And it's been very strange to watch him pitch basically since then. And yeah, I'm blown away by his inclusion here. But second slowest pitch by a person who is paid to do that.
That is crazy. Okay,
still
so
two
it's
more.
So we have, yeah, so there's
two
more.
Four guesses though, right? There's two more. No,
I think I had my fifth guess already.
Did you get five in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So the
well, you were kind of set up that way.
Actually, you know, I should have given you the AL East as a guess, as a hint.
AL
there,
East.
Because yes.
And he's not an Oriole?
Not an Oriole, actually. We don't have to think about ourselves here.
All right, I'm not even going to waste everyone's time. Who is that AL East pitcher?
We have Garrett Richards.
Oh, yes, that makes sense.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, that
yeah.
Makes
and then
sense.
Alec Mills is fifth on the list.
Alec Mills,
and yeah, he still plays for the Cubs.
Yeah, he's starting now. Yeah.
Oh well, okay. Yeah. Nobody else
I guess
is left
why he's
over
on
there.
This list.
Yeah.
So but, the follow up here is that now we expect overlays on your Twitter feed of all of these pitches.
Love when Pitching Ninja does like the really super slow pitch with like a really super fast pitch. It really
yeah.
That really makes.
It would be funny if that Corbin pitch was like his foot slipped right and he like shot put it yeah, and they counted it.
It could be. That is really shocking to me, man. That's a great trivia question.
You know, I hope that all of you guys on here get just a tiny glimpse into the terrible, terrible things that we get up to in the PL Discord's trivia channel, which I keep notifications on for, by the way.
That's
so
great.
I never miss one.
And I do see you in there. I don't come in there as much, but now I come in every once in a while, and you usually do knock it out of the park with those.
It does. Speaking of Venn diagrams, that's one where that makes a lot of sense to me.
Right in the middle for him?
Right in the middle for him.
Smack dab.
All right, let's get to... Sorry, go ahead.
Dave Turman and myself just causing
problems.
Yeah,
you and Dave, seriously. It is you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the reason I kind of raised this also, other than I just kind of wanted to screw with you, the question, is that, you know, I'm always curious whenever like we're going in there and I'll be like kind of giving people hints or like talking through the logic behind it, because I think that's some of the most fun kind of like, what do I know about baseball? How do I make connections questions?
It's sure.
Like, you're like thinking like old... throws a curveball,
yeah,
and
yeah,
just close your eyes and turn from there.
The thought process, I think, is huge, and it actually kind of is a nice, very nice segue into what we're going to talk about today. Is kind of the central part of this, which is like, how do you find an undervalued pitcher? And I know, obviously, CSW a big thing. We can talk about that and how you came into that and how you use that. But like other ways that when you're doing these things, when you're deciding what is it that you want to get into, or I have this question about pitching. How do I solve it? What's your process for that? How do you, going in and doing like a deep dive on Jake DeGrom is like, you know, you could, right? But you're going to figure out that he is what we already know he is. So, you know, like if we're talking about people that you thought were going to be great coming into the year, people that you're thinking are going to have a resurgence in the second half, people you're really looking forward to seeing maybe come up or start next year, who they are, why you care, how you go through that process, what stats matter to you. Obviously, CSW at the top of that list. But like that your process in going through all of this, I think, again, that like thinking out loud piece of it is really, really interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to jump off with what you said, too, where it's like, we know Jacob DeGrom is good.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we find the people mid-season in a way, and what can we trust aside CSW? People, they know CSW, and if they don't, it's called strikes plus whiffs over total pitches. It is very helpful. One of the things that I've really enjoyed doing as of late is if a pitcher has had one shying away at this point from season totals, and that's for two reasons. One, the Gloopgate stuff, and yeah. I think there is a marked difference in a lot of pitchers and how they perform before.
Do you
and
have
how
that trademark, by the way? Because that's the first I've heard of it, and it's pretty awesome.
Oh, I think Nick, I think, might have said it first, and then I just took it from him. It is great. It really is good.
That's a T-shirt. That's gotta be. We have to make that one.
It really is. And then the other is like, you know, right now, Matt Harvey's a poor example, but Matt Harvey, since the All-Star break, is the best pitcher in baseball. Right. He has a sub-1 ERA, which is hilarious. And
has the Dark Knight returned?
No.
Risen? I haven't watched any of those movies in a while. I'm sorry. I'm really butchering that joke.
No, there is a great old... I love Batman, which is kind of funny and embarrassing. And I think there's a comic called The Dark Knight Returns with like an older... like out of shape Batman, I always wanted like Brian Dennehy to play it. Just like really made me laugh to think about Brian Dennehy in a Batman costume, because that's what he looks like in the comic, and that's the version of Matt Harvey maybe. But the reason I bring him up is like, if you looked at his numbers overall on just a regular leaderboard from the beginning of the season, you would immediately, rightfully so, cast him to the side. There are other pitchers who are having success in 5 or 6 game samples that are really good to see. So I'll look at recent box scores and see who's performing well. What I really like to do to get really into the nitty gritty, and this is a good example, is like Blake Snell, right? Blake Snell, great start in his last outing, right? 13 Ks. I will go directly to their Baseball Savant page. I will look. The first thing that populates underneath the page as you scroll down is their pitch percentage by year. Mm-hmm. What I will do is I will change season to that year, 2021, and I will change season. It goes season, month, and game. I'll change it to game, and I will try to get a good idea of if there have been marked changes in a smaller sample size as to what they are throwing. just to get a good sense of if there's anything legitimate to buy into here or not. Sometimes we get like Chris Flexen's where it's like they're just kind of having a lucky streak. And sometimes we get a Blake Snell who threw like all sliders and four seamers like for pretty much the first time. And I think that like that is an all we're doing is making guesses. Right. And then we're going on Twitter and pretending that we're smart. And because all we're doing is making guesses, all we can do is look for evidence to back up those guesses.
Sure.
And Nick actually phrased this really well because I was getting on him about this Blake Snell bump that he did on the list where it's like, listen, all we're looking for is a change. Sometimes that change is one that will stick and we look like geniuses. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that change is Robbie Ray changing his arm slot in 2020 and me drafting him everywhere and him looking absolutely terrible, right? But the point is, when anyone can say to me, why did you suggest Robbie Ray last year? You lost me my fantasy league. I can say, here's the piece of evidence. This is what I went off of. Usually this means a good thing. Look at Lucas Giolito, who changed his arm slot. This didn't happen for him, and we'll move on. But I think looking at those small details and trying to find those things is great. And the last thing I'll say about this, because I feel like I'm just taking up a lot of time with this answer, is really it's, I kind of contradicts exactly what I just said. Be intrigued by that one start, but don't dig too much into it. I have been fortunate enough to talk to plenty of pitchers to understand that we all as a community love to overthink things.
Sure.
And sometimes they are literally like, my nail hurt. I could not throw my cutter.
Yeah.
My, you know what I mean? It's quite literally that simple. And we're like, well, he was facing a lefty and yeah, he's right. actually going up his store.
Jupiter and Mars were in alignment. And so, yeah, right.
And it turns out he like scratched his ass and he cut his nail and it hurt and he can't throw his cutter. Like, and that's it.
Yeah. 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 So, go ahead, Chase.
I just love to hear all of like the weird little things that everyone has. Like, they're not quite idiosyncrasies, but, you know, like, just like, hey, this one thing I did one time, and as a result, I ended up picking up Kevin Gausman at the right time last year or whatever, and as a result, I will always do it for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, those are the things that I think make a lot of, like, the people that I chat with interesting. It's like, oh, yeah, I have this thing, it's my bit, and it busts, like, three quarters of the time. But it's mine,
yeah.
So, and you can't have it.
It's so funny that you say that, because I always say that the best baseball writer in the world is that guy Daniel Kahneman, who's not a baseball writer at all, right? He wrote Thinking Fast and Slow, and he wrote this new book, which is right at my desk right now, called Noise, about how we interpret noise and how we audit noise. Mm. And those are the best fantasy baseball books in the world, because they're all about addressing your biases.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. People definitely get stuck in their own patterns and their own, this thing worked for me 12 years ago and I just can't let go.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. That being said, now I'm gonna ask you to be set in your opinions of somebody. Who's the person on your radar? Who's the next guy we should be paying attention to?
Oh God, that's such a good question. If I'm putting my Orioles hat on, I really actually am allowing myself to feel emotion about Grayson Rodriguez. I think he's going to be a big deal, and it excites me very much.
So he is currently pitching about 30 minutes from where I live.
In Bowie? In Bowie, rather?
Yeah, I'm going on Thursday. Oh. So, you know,
hey, you're going to make it.
Friday.
We've been talking all season,
right? Right? Thursdays they have a happy hour deal from 5 till 6:30, and it's been way too good to pass up, and I've been passing it up for a long time.
So you're gonna get to go, and then you're not gonna remember that you went.
I think you're on. I have to drive home, so maybe not. Okay, but yeah, you know, I think I'm really, really disappointed. I think Grayson might be pitching like literally tonight, and if not tonight, tomorrow. So I will miss his start and instead see someone else. It's not DL Hall. I've been like trying to like watch this and get everything lined up, and as a result, I didn't see Adley Rutschman at AA even once. Happy for him that he's gone. But yeah, what is it that's got you so excited about Grayson? Because I won't will myself to jinx any of that, because I too am excited. But
I Yeah, I think it's just like when I've watched him pitch before, because, you know, when it comes to like the minor league guys, there's not so much data that's like actually going to be available for them. But when I watch him pitch, there is an actual like explosiveness to watching him pitch. I mean, he also has, I'm looking at the stats now, it's 114 Ks to 19 walks. That makes me feel real. That makes me feel real happy. That makes me feel really good things inside my body. So I think that's great. I just the way that he, it looks like it's all like small tweaks at this point. There isn't really anything that I see in his arsenal that's like, that's probably not going to make it to the big leagues. You know what I mean? It's like all of the, each individual pitch in and of itself just looks so great. And I also think we're seeing one of the first players to come up through the Mike Elias and Sig Meidel system. You know
if
what
you
I mean?
Didn't say it, I was going to.
Yeah. Like that's where it is. Like that to me, I mean, like Adley is that also, I don't remember if Duquette, no, I don't. I think Adley was drafted. No, I don't think he was drafted by Duquette. Either way, he's he wasn't right. So, it, like being able to see that, and it's like also that ability for Orioles fans to like trust that system. But and then I guess someone who I still can't give up on is Mike Clevinger, and I'm fully aware that the explosive mechanics are still there. And I'm also fully aware that I don't know how in love I am with how the Padres continue to develop pitchers. You know what I mean? Like, have we seen, like, Paddock fell by the wayside when he tried to make a tweak to that fastball and curveball, and that hasn't been great. Mackenzie Gore is getting hammered down in the minor leagues, and we're still waiting on that to kind of happen. I mean, Diddleston LeMet, obviously fantastic, but injury concerns. Blake Snell came over, and I think we found out why the Rays were like, it's actually fine if we deal you away right now. And, of course, there's Darvish. I'm not saying it's all bad. But, like, I the thing that gives me most pause, I guess, is that. But, like, I think we often forget that when he pitches, he's just so dominant, you know? And I love that about him. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I think that I've been kind of like slowly putting my eye to more and more is the fact that, you know, baseball is just really a game of a lot of choices made over and over and over again. And we forget the people who are making them rather than just kind of like a person who does a ratio over and over again. You know, people aren't dice rolls. They can change their mind. Is that some teams are much better at either telling people which decisions to make or telling which decisions not to make than others. You know, you bring up the changes in the system that we might see some benefits of the Orioles roster eventually soon, but you know, there's a lot of data informed practices and just better coaching. There are a bunch of Orioles minor league managers who have like won awards, notably Zach Britton's brother is probably the manager in waiting for the Orioles.
Is he really? I did not know that.
I think I have that right, and I'm willing to say it out loud.
Himself.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's it. Awesome. It never happens.
But, you know, a big part of that, though, is that, you know, you just change everything that you're doing. You bring in a new crop of people. You make better decisions based off of, you know, science and stuff. Good things happen. And there are a lot of other teams where you're seeing people move around the league. I brought up Kevin Gausman earlier, but, you know, it's wild to think, you know, there were choices you can make better on the coaching side, and I think I'm starting to trust more and more that if an organization shows that they are, treat their people well and believe in things that are worth believing in, good things can happen. And it's, I think, one of the most essential things about like making sense of this weird stuff that we try to make sense of, that like you remember these people are people.
Yeah.
You know, I've been kind of like paying attention more in recent times to like, you know, I feel like Cleveland has a really strong record for developing talent, allegedly, and stuff. I don't know. Their results have been pretty good. They also have a pretty good record of, like, relative to the rest of baseball. Their minor leaguers have great, like, facilities. You know, like, they invest their people. They make good choices. And, you know, I can quibble here and there about stuff, and I won't put you on the spot about everything. But, you know, it matters what conditions you're in. And I think I'm just cheering for the best for a lot of people in those sorts of ways, because it's hard to model. This person is in a good circumstance where someone believes in them. And I'm really excited for that in the Orioles system, because I feel like the tides are turning for a lot of guys like Grayson Rodriguez to get some really good instruction and hopefully pan out.
Well, that's such a great point. Like, okay, there was an article that I was thinking about writing. I still want to write at some point, which is like, who is the last great or good pitcher to come up through an organization for all 30 organizations, right? And one of the things that became so hard to quantify, and while I was kind of so interested in it because it's hard to quantify, is like, where are the failings, right? Mm. The Rangers have not had a good pitcher come up through their system in quite some time. Like, it might be like maybe Derek Holland when he came up, or like Alexi Ogando or something. Yeah. Like, it's been a long time. So who is the failure? Like, where are the failings there? Is it the front office? Is it the people drafting? Is it the people who are developing? Then there are often times where they have drafted first round picks as pitchers and then traded them away. Yeah. Is that because they don't trust their organization? Is that because they think they don't need pitching? So, and I think, you know, Cleveland is the exact opposite of that. As you said, the facilities are better, and from what I hear, the game planning starts at an early level. They are helping their minor leaguers game plan, their pitchers game plan, so that way when they come to the big leagues, there's one less thing for them to worry about, right? They already understand organizationally how to game plan. And I guess I'm having an epiphany as we're having this conversation, where it seems like it's all about pipeline, right? And how do you build a success? It's easy to say, oh, we're a company, we need a successful pipeline. But it's easier said than done in baseball, considering the high amount of turnaround that exists within that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I find that, you know, like, there are so many difficulties we can find, and it's almost easier, I think, to figure out which things are going to go wrong when you're trying to predict the future and figure out which guy that you're just going to irrationally latch yourself onto. Luis Garcia, by the way, that's my answer. I'm latching myself onto Luis Garcia.
Okay.
I feel like I'm coming to terms with the fact that I'm an Astros apologist, and I've said this out loud a few times, but I have far too many friends who are from Houston who are in my ear all the time, and I end up watching their games, and then suddenly I'm like a Kyle Tucker fan, and it's crazy. But, you know, these things clearly matter. And it's really interesting to me to kind of just like try to figure out what those possible things at least are, more than at this point trying to figure out exactly what I can do with the same data that everyone else has, because I feel like part of it is getting bored. Part of it is, I think, you know, there's something very stressful about being like 75% of the way to an epiphany and like knowing how to write about it, but kind of doubting that you've got it all figured out, which I think is kind of like looping back to another conversation. But being able to recognize what it is that's like a roadblock might really help us to at least unpack what's different and weird about a guy and kind of figure out something about it, even when the data is not all perfect and smooth. You know, I feel like some of the most fun I've had in the past year just trudging through data sets or whatever is like trying to figure out actually some of the holes in like CSW, because everything has holes,
of course,
and it's more fun whenever the thing that you're messing with belongs to someone that you might enjoy annoying once in a while. So
never. And you know, it's funny too, that harkens to another point where it's like every pitcher's in the big leagues for a reason, even the bad ones, and they do one thing and one thing very well. Sometimes it's multiple things. Sometimes it's just one thing. I had a tweet about in zone swing strike rate yesterday. Razzball, Gray Albright responded about where is one pitcher, and then I made like the bottom of the list because it turned out he was at the bottom. And Brett Anderson was the very lowest on the list. And all I did was, you know, say number 348, Brett Anderson. He has like a 4.4% in zone swing strike rate, and then wrote end of list. And he liked it and commented on it. And I was like, oh man, like I do not want, like I do my very best to not like dunk on pitchers on Twitter, because like I think that they get that enough. But then like we had a small conversation and I caused me to dig more into Anderson, and even a guy who he says in and of himself, like, you know, he might not be where he wants to be exactly. I was looking at his changeup. A changeup's fantastic. It's like literally a top 10 changeup in baseball right now. Like that's amazing. So I love that too. Like going to a pitcher's page, like Amir Garrett was a good example, right? His fastball should not be the way that it is. So why is it? You know what I mean? I love that question too. Why is Amir Garrett's fastball just that. You know what I mean? Why is it? And that's the kind of fun of each player, because there's more differences than I think you'd think.
I think the answer might be because Amir Garrett believes in his fastball, and I believe in Amir Garrett. So whenever
there you go. If, what is it? Mookie Wilson? If someone believes in dinosaurs, and what did he say about that? Like some quote about dinosaurs and believing in them.
I don't know that I know that one, but I want to know that.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm Googling when we're done here. Okay. I think you guys both bring up really excellent points in terms of the human side of this. It's so easy to turn these human beings into just endless numbers and stats and digits and percentages. And, you know, to your point earlier, my finger hurt, so the start went bad. It's a human thing, right? Just as much as understanding what somebody's trying to accomplish. If their in zone percentage is down, but they're doing it on purpose to set something else up, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But if you look at that pitch in isolation and go, "Whoa, what are you doing?" Well, there's a story, and that's an important part of understanding the whole picture. And having those conversations with those actual pitchers, that's huge. So you can get it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. All right, let's move into, we have what we call a pass fail segment, where we just kind of say we give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. But since we're, you know, study hall, it's a pass fail. And I'm going to go to Chase first and Fast second. So Chase, you're going to give me pass fail on Field of Dreams, the flick, the movie itself, Field of Dreams, pass fail.
I think it's just the most example of dudes will do literally anything other than go to therapy and give it a fail.
That may be true. That is definitely not the answer I thought I was getting from you. But
I'm not a nostalgia guy. I'm a little bit too young also, I think, to like really have been into Field of Dreams. Yeah. The only real baseball movie that I care for is Ken Burns Baseball. And other than that, that whole box set was sitting on top of the VCR in my living room for like the entirety of my childhood, and I watched it a couple times then. But other than that, like, I don't have any like serious nostalgia for any of that. It's like, other than that, basically, and like listening to sports talk radio in the Dallas area, I didn't really have a strong like reason to care about baseball. There's a really good sports talk station in the Dallas area called 1310 The Ticket, they are like part of the reason I care about sports, actually. But it was never like watching them and following. It was just, they were funny. We'd circle back. So yeah, I don't have any particular attachment to it. And tried to rewatch it more recently, I just didn't get it.
That's the take I thought we were getting. I thought we were getting a hard fail because I just don't get it. I understand that whole nostalgia thing. That's a big part of it, I think, for me is I was younger when I watched it. And there was like a magic to it. And, now that I'm older and I have kids, the whole like idea of reconnecting with a lost parent, not to be a downer, I lost my dad when I was just 23, and those types of moments as an adult continue to connect with me. But I think obviously that nostalgia piece is a huge part of why I thoroughly enjoy that movie. Now, is it something I throw on the regular? No, definitely it's not. But it's very divisive. People very strongly against this movie.
If not only because of the have a catch, play catch thing, right?
Right.
I mean, that's why it feels like.
All right, so I'm going to throw the same question over to you, Fast, except it's not about the movie. It's about the actual MLB baseball game that is happening at the field with the cool old unis. Are we giving that a pass or a fail?
I'll give the notion of it a pass. The notion of it is fun and it is romantic, and I do dig that. And it's also like, yeah, sure, let's have fun. Let's do a game outside of a stadium. Let's treat ballparks like Mario Kart circuits. And like, let's just make some crazy, crazy, I'm talking super mega baseball. I do like it. I'll give it a pass.
Yeah. Go ahead.
On that note, we need a series in Mexico City like every month.
Yeah.
Because that is Mario Kart baseball
right.
as well.
Cores times Ooh. 10, right?
What a beautifully good take.
I love the idea of this game. The only thing I think it's missing is I think that they should have gone to those leagues that exist throughout the United States where they still play with the old-timey gloves. And there should have been like an all-star game exhibition of those dudes. like the night before. Just set it up, made it like a whole all-star weekend with the old-timey equipment and all of that. I think that would have been pretty killer. But I'm not like silent about the things that sometimes MLB does to try and get pop, and you know, I think it's all valiant. I don't know how much of it lands. I love that they keep trying. I think some of it's cool. I think this is really kind of cool, because even if you're not into the movie itself, it's different. It's quirky. Like you said, romantic, interesting, engaging. You know, kind of like, you know what this reminds me of a lot is the outdoor hockey thing that they do in the NHL.
I went to one of those.
Yeah, and they're cool. They really are. If it was all the time, it would be too much. But it's a really, I always
you're
look forward to them.
That, by
and
the way.
I watch those games whether I care about the teams or not. You know, I am a hockey fan. I'm not a diehard. But I don't care who's playing in it. It's kind of a neat thing. And maybe it's like the novelty of it. I don't know. But I like it. I think it's a cool idea.
I'll say there's a missed opportunity that I doubt they're going to do, where they should hire 10 to 15 baseball lookalikes of past baseball greats and have them just roam out of the field, left field, right field, center field, at any moment during the game. Like, that is the way to do it. Like,
a little
there's
fog.
A fly ball to left field. Yeah, a little fog, and then a Babe Ruth impersonator just walks out totally confused, and then, you know, like an I think you should leave skit, and then just walks back into the cornfield, and that's it.
See, this is where your television
production
is.
They won't do that?
Huh?
Are you leaking that they won't do that?
Yeah, sorry. I apologize. We can't put this live
first,
until the end.
Folks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I'm totally fired.
All right. We have one more segment that we like to do at the end called Off the Books, which veers from like the stats and the analysis and just kind of talks about cool things about baseball. And whether you like to admit it or not, you are definitely one of the cool things about baseball, my friend. And I know you can shake your head. Nick does the same thing when I try and tell him nice things. But the overlay work,
nice things are lies.
They're not lies, man. Your overlay work is cool. It's very cool. It's engaging and in those good ways that I think it's one of those things baseball needs to appeal to a broader audience. And it's so visual. Listen, just as a teacher in my profession, visual stuff is really, really powerful and important. I really want to dig in as much as we can. I mean, not like the, okay, I sit here and I have the X axis and this is the software that I use, but more like the ideation of it and the concepts of it, because they're not just, and look, Pitching Ninja does cool stuff, right? But it's the stuff you're doing isn't just like, hey, this cool pitch and it went from here to here. It's like multiple pitches and different stats. And as you were saying, like, it's really created to build the capacity of the viewer to understand these complex things in easier ways, and it works. It's doing that. So like, how do you get your ideas? How does, when it goes from idea to like Sunday Night Baseball, what's the path? What's I guess the A to Z there?
Yeah. Okay. So let's focus specifically on Sunday Night Baseball, because I think it's a good way to kind of walk through it. So you usually get a text message from one of the producers saying like, hey, these are the guys that I think are going. What do you have? Right. Like, what do you have for me? You know what I mean? Because a lot of these baseball producers are very smart and they watch baseball, but they don't have a lot of time to like go on Baseball Savant every 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. Right.
So usually what I'll do is I'll go to a Pitcher's Baseball Savant page, or I'll go to Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard and see exactly what it is that they have that gets them to that point, right? Like we talked about earlier, every pitcher has something that gets them to where they are. And I'll usually try and find their highest pitch by swinging strike rate, and then see conceivably what makes it that, right? Okay. Like a slider can be really high on swinging strike rate because of its slider, or it can be really high in swinging strike rate because of its sinker. Like it pairs with a sinker. So one good thing to do is if I'm going to a pitcher's page, I can look at their spin direction charts and see if anything in particular plays off of one another. The Rage used to always be up and down, you know, the Blake Snell blueprint, fastballs high, curveballs low. Now I try and look a little bit more for east-west. I think that showcases a little bit better. And then what I really want to do is try and find the most accurate representation of what that pitcher is doing. You have a lot of power when you're making overlays because you can show two pitches from the one of the first and one of the eighth. You know what I mean? I always try and make it to the best of my ability the same at bat. And a pitcher once told me pitches tunnel maybe one or two pitches after one another, and that's it.
Okay.
So then I really try and make it that as well. Like, I don't want to do a pitch that's 0-0 and then a pitch that's 3-2 because that's not tunneling. You know what I mean?
So
that's
you're moving further away from apples to apples.
Exactly. There's no reference. You don't know what happened there, and the batter is in a completely different mindset, and he's thinking about things a little bit differently. So I really try and put those two things, and then also just try and, like, again, you have a lot of power there. And I don't want to misrepresent what a pitcher does. And if he tends to go over the heart of the plate with a fastball a little bit more, like I think Dylan Cease did at the beginning of the year, I want to show that. You know what I mean? I want to show the heart of the plate. So it's about, you know, the whole point of the overlay in and of itself is to educate about how a pitcher is having success. So as a result, you really have to constrain yourself with how you're making it to showcase how he's doing it in the most truthful way possible, so you're not misrepresenting the way that they're having success. And that's one of the things that I learned too, is like, Premier is a hell of a drug, man. Like, all you have to do is move that hand over a little bit and two pitches are coming out of the exact same arm slot perfectly, and that pitcher is amazing, and that's why he has success. And you really have to be careful. So I guess the last thing then is, like, when you're making it, you're not matching up the arms, right? Because that's disingenuous. There's different release points. You are really trying to make sure that the two usually what I do is I put two on top of each other and then I fade one out a little bit and make sure that the camera angle matches perfectly. That's one thing that I've realized is cameras are very inconsistent.
Yeah.
Even pitch to pitch, man. Like, even every time, like, a pitcher, like, they'll go to a different camera or something like that, or there's a different at bat, it'll change everything. So it's really all about dealing with all those struggles and then just trying to find something accurate.
Okay. Follow up there.
True.
Best and worst cameras by stadium.
Oh my God. Oh God. Okay, great. I don't Tampa's really good. Tampa's been a lot of fun. I don't mind Texas as much. It's not great. Colorado, man. Oh, lordy. That is so
just
bad.
One more thing on their list.
Throw it on the pile.
It is.
Throw it on the pile.
It's unbelievable. At least I know what their cameraman in center field is doing. He's just getting high the entire game. there's that. And then, there's some other, like, small ones. It's like, how have we not learned that it shouldn't be 40 feet to the right of a pitcher? Like, make it somewhat behind him.
Feel like the Angels have a pretty weird one, but that might have just been a couple games.
No, you're right. There. I had to make one of Shohei Ohtani, and it's a little bit of a nightmare. It's a little bit of, which is such a shame. It's, like, really such a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, and that obviously makes a big difference. It looks like you're getting an angle that's showing you one thing, but it's really very, very different, right? Totally different.
100%. Yeah. Cincinnati's another good one. You can't really even tell how dominant Luis Castillo can be at home sometime, or it doesn't do justice to how insane his changeup is, because that angle, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I know that based off of the type of movement, I know this mostly from playing MLB The Show, which I am really bad at. Just plug there that I'm bad at. different angles will make different types of pitchers look different types of nasty.
Yes.
You know, if you're offset really badly, then you will not see some of that east-west movement in the same sort of way. Or alternatively, it'll make you seem like you throw a pitch that breaks 18 feet to the right. Hello, Dustin May.
Yeah.
Are we announcing now that the expert level for the game is going to be the Colorado Rockies camera angle? That's when you get to expert level. That's how you have to play. I have one last question about this, and then it's actually going to bring us to the end of this conversation, which is sad because it's been a lot of fun. This has been great. Mm. What do you think are the next? What's the next level of this? Is it broadcast stuff? Is it something that you can get through to through social media where you click on something and it brings up something else, or maybe some sort of VR element or component? What's the next level of these overlays and kind of the visualizations?
That's such a good question. That gets me really excited. The next level in one way is more people doing it and creating their own voice within it, right? Like, mine are similar to Pitching Ninjas, but slightly different. Not better, not worse, just different.
Yeah, right, right.
And they are, there's so much room for people to take this visual language and make it their own, and that really, really excites me. And if you have Premiere, and that kind of stinks because I know Premiere can definitely be cost prohibitive, but I have a tutorial online. Go figure out how to do it yourself. Yeah. and make them. Like make them. Like, whenever people are like, hey, do you mind if I, you know, do this? I feel like I'm, you know, people have DM'd me saying, like, I feel like I'm ripping off your style. No. Do it. I don't care. I don't care at all. Like, the whole point is to spread the sport. Like, go do it. There's like truly no ego there. I do think continuing to do it with broadcast is really big, especially as the demographic that watches the sport gets the older demographic doesn't like sabermetrics. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say ties off because that sounds awful, but it starts to be more accepting of sabermetrics, you know what I mean? And I think so as a result, we'll start to see it in broadcast a little bit more. And there are already companies like Win Reality that are showing the effectiveness in VR. Mm. And as I don't know if VR ever is going to be as big as people think it's going to be, but for hobbyists, they can see the effectiveness of something. I used to have to go to the All-Star game a bunch for work. We had a VR headset, home run derby experience, and I also saw a VR experience that, like, you're allowed to catch a ball and see how quick it comes in and stuff like that. Hmm. As that gets bigger, people will enjoy that more because it brings them a different experience about the game. So yeah, I think that's where I hope and I think it's going. Yeah.
Fantastic. Chase, anything else that you want to add before we have to bring our episode to an end here?
You know, I often think, you know, the coolest thing that can happen is that you have an idea and it just becomes so normal that other people are not even thinking that they have to attribute it to you whenever they, like, use it.
Yeah.
You know, that I think is kind of like one of the most important things you can do. I'm not going to compare you to Jonas Salk or anything.
like a Kleenex.
I don't need to get
right? It. Like, it just, everybody, you know, just calls
sure,
tissue.
Yeah. Xerox. Yeah. It happens with CSW. Yeah. People are like, they talk about CSW, and I think it's awesome. It's like really cool to, I feel like that old guy in the corner, like, I helped make CSW, you know?
One ring to rule them all.
Wait. Yeah, exactly.
Just wait until one of these days, you know, we're going to get to a point where you're going to, like, have to, like, face the haters online, and you're just going to be, like, so glad that it's gotten so big that it's not, attributed to you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the anti-CSW backlash that's coming here in about 2 years.
I would laugh so hard. I just think that would be such a funny thing to have, like, an entirely anti-person against a sabermetric. That makes me laugh.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Alex. Anything else, last words that you want to put out there, especially all of the various places people can find you? I'm sure that there's not anybody listening who doesn't know you and know where they can follow you. But, like, obviously Twitter and all the broadcast stuff that you're doing. But final words, all that stuff. Yep.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. It's been awesome to just sit and talk with you guys. And it's so nice to do a podcast where I can relax and not have to, like, research 5,000 things beforehand. I, like, genuinely appreciate and love that. So thank you. I'm on Twitter at AlexFast8, and come on and we'll talk some baseball.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's where you can find Alex Fast. Alexander Chase, could you go ahead and tell the people where they could find us?
Well, they can find you on Twitter at TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at Chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.